Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Who was here yesterday for Bhakti's class? Did he just do 24 or did he read another couple? One should know the acharyas myself and never disrespect him in any way. Yep. So that's text number 27. So today we will do text number 28. Which is the slope on the board. Sayam Vratarupanniha Aiksham Tasmai Nibhedayat Yachchan Yadapyan Ughyatam Upayunjita Samyataha Sayam Vratarupanniya Vaiksham Tasmai Nibhedayat Yachchanyadapyano Gyatam Upayunjita Samyataha. Sayam. In the evening, prataha. In the morning, upaniya. Bringing, vaiksham. Food that is collected by begging. Tasmai, unto him the acharya. Devariyat, one should deliver. Yat, that which. Cha, also. And yat, other things. Api, indeed. Anugyatam, that which is permitted. Upuyunjita, one should accept. Samyataha, being fully controlled. In the morning and evening, one should collect foodstuffs and other articles and deliver them to the spiritual master. Then, being self-controlled, one should accept for oneself that which is allotted by the acharya. Purport. One who desires to receive the mercy of a bona fide spiritual master should not be eager to accumulate the paraphernalia of sense gratification. Rather, one is able, whatever one is able to collect, one should offer at the lotus feet of the acharya. Being self-controlled, one should humbly accept that which is allotted by the bona fide spiritual master. Every living entity must ultimately be trained to serve the Supreme Personality of Godhead, but until one has become expert in the techniques of spiritual service, one should offer everything to the spiritual master, who is completely realized in the process of worshipping the Lord. When the spiritual master sees that the disciple is advanced in Krishna consciousness, he then engages the disciple in directly worshipping the personality of Godhead. A bona fide spiritual master does not use anything for his personal sense gratification and entrusts to his disciple only as much material opulence as the disciple can properly offer to the lotus feet of the Lord. The example may be given that when an ordinary father tries to train his son in business and other material activities, he entrusts to the son only as much wealth as the son can intelligently engage in profitable enterprises without foolishly wasting the father's hard-earned money. Similarly, the bona fide spiritual master teaches his disciple to worship the Lord, and an immature disciple must simply deliver everything to the lotus feet of the Guru, just as an immature child does not keep a personal bank account, but rather receives his maintenance from the father, who trains the son to be responsible. If one cheats oneself by defying the order of a bona fide spiritual master or Krishna, one certainly becomes a non-devotee or sense enjoyer and falls from the spiritual path. Therefore, one should be trained to serve a bona fide spiritual master and thus become mature in Krishna consciousness. So I'll read the translation again. In the morning and evening, one should collect foodstuffs and other articles and deliver them to the spiritual master. Then, being self-controlled, one should accept for oneself that which is allotted by the Acharya. So, His Holiness Hridayananda Goswami Maharaj makes this point in the purport that every living entity must ultimately be trained to serve the Supreme Personality of Godhead, but until one has become expert in the techniques of spiritual service, one should offer everything to the spiritual master, who is completely realized in the process of worshipping the Lord. So here, of course, acceptance of the spiritual master is discussed here in terms of serving the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But for many people, serving the Supreme Lord is not their prime concern. But still, they must accept a spiritual master. Quite often the general mass of people are really interested in understanding how they can perform their occupational duty and different rules and regulations of being Brahmana, Kshatriya, Vaishya or Sudra, so that they can exist as an individual, as a family, and so that the society can function. Just as Srila Prabhupada describes that in ISKCON, one of his goals to be fully realized and mature is the establishment of a Varnashram college where fortunate people can actually be trained to become Brahmanas, Kshatriyas, Vaishyas, even Sudras. And in discussing that with his disciples, mentioning that they should all have spiritual training. Although Srila Prabhupada certainly suggested that things such as the study of the basics, the Bhagavad Gita, and some fundamental aspects of spiritual knowledge be there for everyone, really the spiritual training which comes in the form of the brahmachari, you know, the ashrams, comes later. And for some, not so much at all. For many, here we're discussing, you know, training of brahmachari, brahmacharini, in this day and age. many people who may even attend, you know, in the future when we get to establish Vanashram College, many of them may be trained in the Varnas to, you know, a greater proportion. But unless they really show some, you know, spiritual inclinations, or, you know, many of them may not seriously take up that, you know, training as brahmachari, grihastha, vanaprastha, and sannyas. But still, even in the training of, you know, the varnas, one should accept a spiritual master. And be given at least a preliminary understanding of the understanding of the Vedas, as deals with a knowledge of matter and spirit, and you know, how to serve the Supreme Lord through one's occupation. There must at least be that sense that unless someone pleases the Supreme Lord within the Varnashram system, all of one's activities are ultimately useless. That is stated in the Srimad Bhagavatam. And, you know, although one is performing their activities within the Varna as a Brahmana, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Sudra, they should have some sense that ultimately they're, you know, within the society, they're all trying to please the Supreme Lord by those activities. It should be a God-centered activity. Although their individual understanding of the nature of God, the nature of, you know, devotional service, may be very, very limited, but there should be some general understanding. There shouldn't be anyone working with a complete sense of ignorance as to, you know, that there is a God and that all activities ultimately should be dedicated to Him. That general sense should be there for everyone, and that can be gained through, you know, an understanding of a preliminary understanding of Bhagavad Gita. here. Brahmachari life, of course, the different varnas, there is certainly more emphasis on the spiritual training. Those who are brahmanas, they will undertake all four varnas: brahmachari, grihastha, vanaprastha, and sannyas. The kshatriyas will not take sannyas, but they will take vanaprastha. The grihasthas, the vaishyas, they will generally remain as in grihastha. But the Sudras, there's really no brahmachari, you know, training. But that, you know, they will certainly take to the grihastha ashram, but they may take to the grihastha ashram with very little proper training as in the brahmachari life. But certainly the higher three classes, Brahmanas, Kshatriyas, and Vaishyas, they will accept a spiritual master and be given initiation Brahminical, not Brahminical initiation, but sacred thread initiation. They will all accept the Gayatri Mantra. I'm not sure they actually all wear the Brahman thread, but they all get the Gayatri Mantra. So the Brahmanas, Kshatriyas, Vaishyas, they all chant the Gayatri Mantra. And they're all considered twice born. And they do that by accepting a spiritual master, and all of them will then go and live away from home with the spiritual master and be trained up, one, in an understanding of the Vedas and the supplements such as the Upanishads, so they get the understanding of the nature of matter and spirit, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the nature of their own spiritual identity as the eternal servant of the Lord, plus whether they're Brahman, Kshatriya, Vaishyas, they may get some specific training. So the Brahmins will get training in Brahmana activities, and the Kshatriyas will get some specific training in Kshatriya activities, and the Vaishyas will get specific training in that portion of the Vedas dealing with the Vaishya activities. So we see that Krishna, just to show the importance that everyone must accept a spiritual master, especially the higher three classes. If they don't accept a spiritual master, one is not, there's no question of actually being cultured. Anyone, from a Vedic perspective, anyone who has not accepted twice born status by being initiated into the Brahma Gayatri by a spiritual master, and then having been trained by a spiritual master, cannot be considered cultured. They're considered low class, because without that training, actually their consciousness and activities must remain low class. One is elevated, without that training and elevation, one cannot elevate one's consciousness and activities. In the same way, unless one is accepted within an institution that accepts such and such a person is qualified to begin training as a doctor or a lawyer, so they're formally accepted and then they're given training. Without that, they cannot become a doctor or a lawyer. So, similarly, to actually, for one's level of knowledge and activities to rise to a certain point, there must be acceptance, into that training, and then the actual training itself. And then one's consciousness and activities rise. So we see that Krishna, when he went to Mathura, his father, Vasudev, organized that Gargamuni would give him the second initiation, become Dvija, and so he was initiated by Gargamuni. But then he was actually sent to Avantipur, where he was given his brahmachari training by Sandipani Muni. So one may have one initiating spiritual master, but one can have many shiksha gurus, or those who train one in certain aspects of the Vedas. We see this in Vedic culture, where many of the acharyas, some were sent to one particular Goswami to get training in deity worship, others were sent to another particular person to get training in grammar and Sanskrit, and they were sent to someone else to get training in preaching, and someone else in study of particular Sanskrit literatures. It's not that one accepts an initiating guru, and that initiating guru is necessarily the main source of one's training in Krishna consciousness. It's not that, you know, quite often that can be so, that the spiritual master, the initiating spiritual master, according to their expertise and level of ability, they may train their disciples in all aspects of Krishna consciousness to some degree or another. But quite often we see in ISKCON, of course, that the spiritual master initiates, and then you know, various members of temples and zones where a disciple is living, they will train the disciples with the, you know, central blessings and authorization of the initiating spiritual master. They will then train the disciples in different aspects of, just like one may get training, you know, in Bhagavad Gita or Srimad Bhagavatam from, you know, particular devotees. One may get training in deity worship from particular devotees. One may get training in, you know, different aspects of preaching from different devotees, or home programs, bhakti bhriksha, in this way. But generally, this is done from very early in life. The main understanding, the main teachings is given very early in life. Although, certainly, as one progresses, there are other Shiksha gurus who will also assist one at other different stages of life in specific training as need be. So, of course, these days, of course, you know, people don't here we see that after Krishna was trained by Sandipani Muni, Krishna learned all the 64 arts mentioned in the Vedas. During the day, he was taught one of the different arts, and by the evening, he was an expert. And the next day, they would like this, train. So over 64 days and nights, he learned all the different arts. Everything you can imagine. So, you know, Krishna was a very interesting personality. Of course, he was literally, you know, being the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he is the source of all knowledge. But also, if we take him as manifesting the role of an ordinary human being, in that role he was particularly interesting because, you know, he knew so many wonderful things. So at the end of all that training, of course, he was also trained in how to be a Kshatriya, because his father Vasudeva was a Kshatriya. So they learned how to fight politics. Politics means how to make peace, how to make war, how to divide and rule, like that. Ethics, because you can't have politics without ethics. All these different things are needed to be understood by the Kshatriyas. And at the end of that training, Krishna approached the spiritual master to offer him Guru Dakshina. Guru Dakshina means that the disciple, having obtained everything he needs to be free from the influence of the material energy in this life and to be completely successful and happy in everything he does, all that knowledge is received by the guru, and also to you know, return back to the spiritual world at the end of his life. So therefore the debt to the spiritual master needs to be repaid, because one has received literally the ability to fulfill all one's desires, material and spiritual, by the grace of the spiritual master, if one has a bona fide spiritual master. So Krishna approached Sandip Panimuni and wanted to offer him Guru Dakshina. And Sandip Panimuni said, "Well, I understand that you are no ordinary person, and therefore I'm going to ask something extraordinary for Dakshina. And I would like that you return my son who drowned at Prabha Kshetra." So Krishna immediately accepted, yes, you know, it is my duty to make the spiritual master completely satisfied. So Krishna actually went to Prabha Kshetra, and he went into the ocean. He actually called upon Varuna. Is it Varuna, the god of the ocean? I think that's him, yeah. And not too good with the demigods. So Varuna appeared, and he said, "It wasn't me, you know, that drowned this young boy. There's a demon down in the ocean, and he assumes the form of a conch shell, and he killed him." So Krishna went down, found that demon, and killed him, but couldn't find the son. But he kept the conch shell as a panchajanya, as we know in the Bhagavad Gita. Krishna blows it because it's his eternal, paraphernalia. But he arranges that his eternal paraphernalia is collected in his pastimes, but these are his eternal paraphernalia anyway. So then he went to the abode of Yamaraj, and Yamaraj of course had that little boy, and so he handed him over to Krishna, and Krishna took him back to Sandip Panimuni, and Sandip Panimuni was very, very happy. And he blessed him. He said that because you have completely satisfied, you've done your duty and given proper Guru Dakshina and completely satisfied your spiritual master, therefore, although you're beyond giving blessings, it's my duty to give a blessing. So I'll give you this blessing, that whatever you speak and whatever you teach will always be as ever fresh as the Vedas, and it will remain famous in all places at all times, and it will always be ever fresh and always new and ever increasing important. So this is the blessing that Sandip Panimuni. So therefore we can see with the Bhagavad Gita that it remains always ever fresh as the Vedas, known throughout all the universe, and its importance actually is always increasing in value. So this is the teachings. So you can see, although of course these are the pastimes of Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he's also giving very vital instruction here that if one should actually, having received great benefit and blessings, training and education from the spiritual master, one should give Guru Dakshina in the form of offering whatever one can do to fully satisfy the spiritual master. In fact, Srila Prabhupada mentions that one should actually dedicate one's life to pleasing the spiritual master. even after doing that wonderful feat for Sandip Panimuni, Krishna then asked him, "Is there anything more?" Just to make sure that he was completely satisfied. "Is there anything more I can do? Not that I've done enough, I've done something wonderful. Don't ask anything more. So, of course, these teachings are completely lost. We see that there are many people, especially among the Indian community, particularly among the Indian community, who follow the Varnashram. But as Krishna describes as Prabhupada describes in the Krishna book, if one follows the Varnashram system without being trained by superior authority, they don't get the benefit, and if anything, they just create trouble for themselves and for other people. You see, especially I see it with the love of samskaras and jagyas that I do on behalf of the Indian community, not associated with ISKCON so much. They, instead of feeling that there is an ongoing process of being trained in the Varna and Ashram, they feel that the priest is almost their servant at their beck and call. That, if whatever, the priest somehow has to fit in to the family activities, and if there's some slight inconvenience to the family, then the priest will, have to, be postponed or called back another time. But there's never any question that, from the priest side, that there may be some inconvenience or what have you. There's a whole different mentality. And there's no conception, of course, of Guru Dakshina. Here, Krishna shows that if one has a proper understanding of those Brahmins who train one in social and spiritual, orders of life, and while getting that training, tries to please and satisfy, the Diksha Guru, the Shiksha Gurus, then the Brahmins, they give their blessings, and by those blessings, everything becomes fruitful. Whereas, if there's no attempt, not even an understanding, that one must satisfy or somehow please, certainly never displease or be offhand and arrogant to the Brahmas, then even though one may be performing various ceremonies and what have you, there can be very little benefit. So, in other words, it's not that we just do the ceremony. For instance, if Krishna had just taken the training and not tried to satisfy Sandipani Muni, saying, well, this is Vedic custom, you're supposed to give the knowledge free, you don't take the wage, you're a Brahmana, or you accept charity, here's a banana and an apple. You've given me so much, and I really appreciate it. Here's a banana and an apple. If Sandipani actually wasn't satisfied, then the blessings that he offered would not be there. In other words, the knowledge obtained would not produce any fruits. Even though one may have been trained in all the knowledge of the Vedas and trained as a Kshatriya, But leaving the Guru's ashram without having fully satisfied the Guru, that knowledge would have no effect. And if anything, it would just simply create trouble for oneself and others. So we see, of course, when the initiates in ISKCON, they take initiation, then straight after the Jagya, they get their begging cloth and, they go and they collect guru dakshina, and, people put their fives and tens and their buttons and whatever, and then they go and give the guru dakshina to the guru. So one should never think that that's the end of guru dakshina. It's something to remind the disciple. It's a little ritual to remind the disciple that the process of somehow trying to please the guru has just begun. But you've got to get to the point where the guru is just so satisfied, completely satisfied with the disciple. And the guru couldn't ask for anything more. Even the disciples, you have satisfied me fully. Then, whatever knowledge and whatever training the disciple has received, fully manifests its results, in both materially and spiritually. So sometimes people try to cheat the system, and they think, I'll take initiation and I'll give my guru dakshina, and in this way and I'll get some training, and in this way I'll become good grihastha, or later vanaprastha, whatever like that, and I'll perform my activities as a brahmana and what have you. But having not attempted to satisfy the spiritual master, they don't get the blessings, and therefore you see that they remain unable to rise above the bodily platform of life, which is even the very beginning instructions of the Vedas and the spiritual master. What to speak of rising to the platform of pure devotional service, and what to speak of rising to the platform of the Uttama Adhikari, is just not possible. We see here that Krishna, when he was later on, when he met his good friend Sudama Vipra, that Sudama came to Dwarka to meet Krishna, and they recalled that they were together as students, brahmacharis. And one day, Sandipani and his wife had asked Krishna and Sudama to go into the forest to collect some dry firewood. So when Krishna and Sudama went into the forest, this unexpected dust storm just come up, and then things deteriorated, and there was lightning and thunder, and then it rained, and it became so chaotic. And then of course the sun set, and so there they were in this storm-like conditions, wind blowing, lightning and thunder, and they actually become lost in the forest. And in the morning, when Sandipani Muni realized the situation, he sent some of his other disciples, plus he went himself to find Krishna and Balaram, Krishna and Sudama, and when he found them, he was very, very appreciative that they had undergone such difficulty in order to try and serve and please the spiritual master. He's very, very satisfied. And he explained to them that, you've undergone so much penances and so much austerities, to please me, your guru. And most people, they're actually just interested in the bodily concept of life. And, you know, they'll undergo, they won't do anything, you know, other than try to, you know, get some sense gratification. Therefore, they can't perform penances and sacrifices and austerities, especially on behalf of, for someone else's benefit. So again, you know, Sanipandi Muni blessed him and he said that, because you have pleased me so much, I give you the blessing that whatever you have learned will always stay within your memory. And because of that, you will never ever be disappointed. So again, we see, you know, that role of the blessings of the guru being satisfied, that, again, one may learn so much from the spiritual master, but if one has not properly satisfied or tried to repay that debt to the spiritual master, at the time one needs to remember the vital instructions, that will not manifest within one's mind and heart, and one will become bewildered and make some, you know, critical mistakes in life. Even though the knowledge may be there and so much learning, but without the blessings, that, you know, one will still remain bewildered. So one may speak so much wonderful philosophy, this, that and the other, but when someone has to make a particular decision, something important, there's a crossroads has come, and at that particular time one will have to withdraw upon some specific teaching that is being given by a guru, and if the blessings are not there, it will not manifest and one will make a serious mistake. And we see that. So you know, here serving the spiritual master like a menial servant and dedicating one's life to pleasing the spiritual master, it's not that one becomes a disciple and then one becomes just a menial servant and that's the end of the story. You always remain just a menial servant and don't ever expect anything. You know. Or, you know, the guru will benefit unlimitedly and you just remain. No, actually, when one becomes a servant of the bona fide spiritual master, by becoming a menial servant and trying to serve the spiritual master, it is guaranteed that one will never be disappointed, either materially or spiritually, that everything they desire will be manifested by the grace of the Lord, by the grace of the spiritual master, according to, you know, their relationship with Krishna. And that knowledge and training which they have gathered will actually bear fruit at the time when it's needed. And this way they'll be completely successful. But as we pointed out, you know, those who have a very superficial understanding of the Varnashram system, and, you know, sometimes they come before, you know, the priest and they want the priest to do some a particular ceremony, and you know, it's like the priest is their servant, and in many, you know, not in ISKCON of course, or hopefully not in ISKCON, but in many other, you know, sometimes we see in some of the Hindu, you know, traditions that the priest actually becomes you know, dependent for his sense gratification on the families who they're performing ceremonies for, and therefore the families have them firmly under their control, because the priest literally is just looking out for his sense gratification. He's on the bodily platform of life with no real understanding of service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and the family's on the same platform, and the family literally has the priest almost like some, you know, pet dog. You give a blessing here, you give a blessing there, like this. There is really no value. Not only is there no value, it causes unlimited trouble, you know, to both to the priest, to the family, and everything. It is a And that is not the system. So therefore, you know, our duty as within ISKCON is that each and every time, you know, people may come to us and they may have some superficial understanding of the Varnashram system, we should take each and every opportunity to somehow or another teach them the right attitude, you know, the correct relationship between the initiating guru and the Shiksha guru, those who are coming for ceremonies, blessings, training, teaching, like that. We should take that opportunity, and we should also specifically make sure that they understand that without the chanting of the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, all of the activities of Varnashram within this Kali Yuga really add up to zero. There must be the chanting of the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra along with all of one's activities in order for there to be any real benefit. I'll just finish up there if anyone has any questions or comments.
I have a comment. My spiritual master asked me for the key only spreading movement of Prabhupada.
Right. Yes. Yes. And that completely satisfies the spiritual master. Yes.
That's the only thing you want to do. Nothing else.
Which is a very good point, because it illustrates the proper consciousness of the spiritual master, that they're not accepting disciples for some personal profit. And as described in the Nectar Devotion, if a spiritual master does that, they accept followers or perform ceremonies or, you know, activities, and they're thinking so much personal gain, immediately to become disqualified. And you know, the actual bona fide spiritual master is a representative of the Supreme Lord, and his only goal is that those coming to him will one day be nicely situated, directly serving the Supreme Personality of Godhead in this life and in the spiritual world. And that's their gain, that's their happiness, nothing else.
And this happened in my life.
What's that? Just quickly. Yes.
Shall we take just on your death, like
Well, again, we can only think of Krishna by the mercy of the Guru. And the more we please Guru, the more we're able to think of Krishna. Not a mistake, it's the only way. It's the only way we can do it. If we somehow try to think of Krishna and his pastimes and the spiritual world, and we haven't satisfied the spiritual master, it will not be possible. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur says that as much as we are a devotee of our spiritual master, to that same degree, we can become a devotee of Krishna. It's exactly proportional. We can't be more devoted to Krishna than what we are to the Guru. Proportionate to the degree that we please the spiritual master, Krishna, we have the ability to please Krishna and think of Krishna. It automatically, if you're serving and pleasing the spiritual master, you'll automatically be able to serve and please and think of Krishna. Automatically. To that degree. We'll have to do it quickly because Rajana is already sort of giving me the hook. We'll go on. Yeah, just quick.
The comment is that you are very right that guru does not bless, disciple cannot maintain the knowledge. An example of that is Karna. When he was fighting with Arjuna, his guru Maharaj Parshuram has cursed him that at the time when you will most need your knowledge, you will forget it.
Yes, because some curse. Yes, very good.
And the question is not guru, that. You know, Gargamuni, you mentioned about Gargamuni,
yes,
who trained Krishna.
Mm-hmm.
He was
a Sandipani Muni trained him.
Yeah, but when Vasudev sent him to school, that Gargamuni was his instructing master.
Gargamuni gave him the initiation ceremony. And then he went to Avantipur, he went out of Mathura to Avantipur to get training from Sandipani Muni.
So who gave the initiation?
Gargamuni. Yeah. No, we should work towards that when we're chanting, that the form of the Lord will automatically manifest within our heart and mind, and ultimately one day directly. And then increase in results from chanting is that the form and the qualities of Krishna manifest as we're chanting. An increase is that the form, the qualities and the pastimes of Krishna manifest as we're chanting. There's a progression, and those progressions coincide with different levels of bhakti, such as, you know, ruchi, ashakti, bhava, prema. So generally the bhava bhaktis and the prema bhaktis, when they're chanting, the pastimes manifest. See? Not so much for the, you know, those on the lesser, whereas those on, you know, say ruchi and ashakti, then, you know, the form and the qualities may manifest more. So, and reaching those higher and higher stages of devotional service is dependent upon pleasing the spiritual master. So as we serve the spiritual master and he becomes pleased, we gradually elevate ourselves to the Majjhima and Uttama Adhikari platform where we're chanting, and as our chanting, we chant automatically. You know, there's some practice involved, certainly, you know, with that practice, the one is able to chant and, you know, hear the name and also meditate upon the name and the form, you know, and then gradually the qualities. You see, that's synonymous with different higher and higher stages of devotional service, and those higher and higher stages of devotional service are synonymous with how one pleases the spiritual master, like that. So we serve the spiritual master, and automatically we get to a higher stage of devotional service, and automatically on that higher stage our chanting produces further and further results. Hi, all good, Srila Prabhupada.